Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.
Now, do you ever feel bombarded by the amount of data sent or thrown at you on a daily basis? Are you able to understand it? My next guest thinks that simple but effective data visualization, that's graphs and pictures to you and me, is the way we might be able to make sense of this data. His new book, From Chaos to Clarity, How Data Visualization Can Save the World, is out now. So it's great to welcome James Eagle to the show. Good morning, James.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm great, James. I use a term called overwhelmification. It's not actually a word, but I think you'll know what it means.
Yeah, I think so. So I think I understand.
When we're talking about the amount of information that we receive on a daily basis, particularly in our work lives, you're dealing with an awful lot of noise. You're dealing with an awful lot of data. Are you suggesting that to pictorialize or make it into sort of graphic, use graphs and pie charts and that kind of thing, is a much better way of I suppose, synopsisizing the data?
Exactly. So, I mean, I guess where to begin? We live in a world right now that's full of data. Like, we're producing more and more data every single day. And rather than making the world clearer and easier to understand, it's actually making things a lot more confusing. It's making the world less clearer in our eyes. It's harder to actually understand how the actual world works. And I think part of the problem is that we focused so much on other things apart from data. For instance, we focus a lot on climate change. We talk about carbon emissions and how it's warming the planet. But the funny thing is that there's probably potentially a much more lethal threat to us than carbon emissions, and that's data pollution. There's so much data in this world that we're forgetting sometimes how the world actually works. Data is actually clouding our judgment and it's making things more confusing. So a bigger threat to the human race is probably not climate change, although it is a threat. It's probably data and the amount of data that we're creating right now.
Sorry, I just wanted just to probe you slightly on that, James. So data pollution, how could that be, how could that spell the end of the world?
Well, think about it. In a world that's confusing, where you no longer understand or trust what people say, where mainstream media is coming under attack, where anyone can tweet a lie and have it go unverified, it's potentially dangerous, because that misinformation and that an erosion of trust can lead to potentially disastrous consequences. What is dangerous in this type of environment is that the when there's so much noise and so much information out there, and in an environment where you can no longer understand, you can no longer really trust what's right or wrong, the danger for misunderstandings increases. And this is really what is what's potentially dangerous to all of us. And on a much kind of lower level, at an individual level, it can also be potentially dangerous to ourselves, because we can no longer function properly in our own lives because we don't know whether or not the information we're getting
Sorry, James, is there not a bit of personal responsibility around that? That, you verify sources, you research things properly, you make sure that you're not hoodwinked by false data. Like, you do your research. It could mean for higher standards. And I do accept it that anybody can say anything, but anybody who says anything doesn't necessarily have to be believed.
That's right. But the problem is that it's more for human bias that's inbuilt in ourselves. I mean, you're right. I always fact check information that I try to get hold of, but it's very easy to be hoodwinked without realizing it. Anyone can make up a statistic, if I said something like 90% of all kids born today will die at the age of 60 because they use their iPads too much. Okay, maybe that's not so plausible, but you know, you can just make things up. And the reality is that we don't really challenge those assertions. You know, when we hear something, we trust that it's true. When we hear a story, we trust that it's true. And it's very, very easy to frame something and hoodwink someone and remove, you know, and okay. remove that kind
of... Well, look, we're getting a bit deep there, so we'll agree to disagree on some of that. But let's come back to the old, you know, synopsisizing data and showing it in a more concise way, because sometimes simplicity is a very hard thing to achieve. In other words, cutting out the noise out of the information that's coming at you on a daily basis, only really, or having a way to decipher what's important and what isn't. Is that not ultimately what we're looking for?
Exactly. And that's what we've been very good at doing for a very long time, and we just don't realize it. So I'll throw in the word storytelling, because that's probably the oldest form of human communication that we've had since the dawn of time. Since the Stone Ages, we've been telling stories. And effectively, by visualizing data, what you're doing is your data storytelling. You're doing something that we've actually been doing for a really long time and haven't realized. Yeah. So if you imagine, like let's use an example. I mean, and I use these examples in the book I've written, From Chaos to Clarity. If you imagine a caveman talking to his son and trying to explain to him how to kill a mammoth, he's probably not going to give him a step-by-step guide or a tutorial or a PDF document that gives him like the instructions on how to do it. He would obviously, they wouldn't have PDFs or these types of things in those days. He'd sit around the campfire and tell him a really good story. I mean, you know, I'm a dad, and if my son was there, I wouldn't just tell him a really good story. I'd make sure that his eyes are popping out of his head. I'd make sure that he catches every single word that I tell, because the story that I tell him could potentially save his life. You know, I'd tell him how I climbed on the mammoth and I fell off and I broke my arm and I had to grab a spear, and I'd make sure that he listens to every single word that I tell him. And that's the thing about storytelling. When you tell a story, it lights up that part of the brain that sees pictures. You know, it's a form of data transfer.
It's also a more memorable form of communication, is it not?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing. We are built to see in pictures. So the problem in the world that we live right now, and I'm sorry to go deep again, but I have to. We think that we see success as a way, you know, what we consider to be clever is basically turning ourselves into kind of robots, and trying to take everything that's human out of what we do in the world that we live. You know, like, we're not robots. We have emotions, we have feelings, we think in pictures, we communicate with in beautiful stories and sagas and song, and we shouldn't ignore that. That's a part of who we are, and we should also apply those same principles when we try to interpret data and we try to interpret the confusing world that we found ourselves in. But the problem is that we've just not evolved fast enough to live in the technological world that we live in right now. But what we do have, and I think it's beautiful, this is what makes us human, is our ability to appreciate and see things that perhaps computers and AI don't currently see.
Well, you know, with the way things are moving, and as you say, maybe the technology is moving ahead of the sort of human piece. But what you're actually saying could mean that, you know, we're going to value the human side of things even more. The more this AI comes at us, the more we're overwhelmed with data, that the human bits will become more important. Is there any, just to look at it in a positive way?
No, absolutely. I mean, what I would say is that we need to not forget to be human. That's what I would say. Like, we need to, you know, we shouldn't forget about who we are, you know, in an age dominated by AI. And we should celebrate our humanity in this way. And visualizing data like a chart or a graph or a beautiful picture should be embraced as a form of human expression and not something that's just been generated by AI.
Yeah. And finally then, James, do you think we should minimize the data that comes our way? Like, in one way to deal with, you know, being overwhelmed by data is just not to look at it all.
That's a really good question. And it's not a final question. I mean, it's a huge question, actually. I would say, I don't actually see AI as an enemy. I see AI as a potential ally. And the reality is that there's so that in a world awash with data, when there's so much information out there, data doesn't actually help if it's not used. So when you've got dead data or data that's useless, there's no benefit to humanity, no benefit to us. But something like using tools like AI and data visualization together, it can help actually make that data become useful for us and offer us guidance. So I would say that it's not a matter of not producing data. It's a matter of trying to harness the power of the data that's out there and use tools that are out there. So, you know, we can use AI to try and map and navigate our way across this kind of sea of data and help us make more sense of the world.
Okay.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. And it's been great talking to you. We didn't agree on everything, but that's okay.
No, it's great. I don't mind at all.
James Eagle, author of From Chaos to Clarity, How Data Visualization Can Save the World. Best of luck with the book, James, and thanks for talking to us this morning.
Thank you very much.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.